This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Haystack Help Radio. Thank you so much for joining us today. Glad to have Randy Carancy in studio with us, e-bike of Colorado. First of all, give a warm welcome to Randy. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Scott.
Great to have you back in, man.
Yeah, it's nice to see you.
All right. Hey, we got a big announcement today. Got a new show going to start here Wednesdays at noon with Randy and his team at e-bike of Colorado. And, hey, we're going with their tagline, Just Try It. So every Wednesday we will be here at noon with Just Try It, brought to you by e-bike of Colorado. And we are going to break down the whole e-bike world for you and go through all about e-bikes. And Randy, well, I don't want to take away your thunder, so tell us a little bit about your show.
Well, let's see. You know, there's a lot of information about e-bikes out there.
Yeah.
Some of it's truth, some of it's myth. And actually, even the classes where they can be ridden, the trails, the private lands, the public lands, the you name it. There's a lot of different things out there that are being said. And a lot of it is absolutely true. And some of it has some needs to be explained and, you know, clarified a little
sure.
bit.
Sure, absolutely. You know, it's been exciting this last year to work with you and just to see, you know, from where you started and knowing the story where you started to where you are today. I mean, it's really amazing, to be quite honest with you. So congratulations, number one.
Thank you.
I know it hasn't come without blood, sweat, and tears, as they say. But, I mean, you have really built, along with your team, just a great, great company.
Yeah, thank you. You know, Scott, everybody talks about assets, right? You know, you've got a lot of inventory, you've got, you know, nice buildings, you've got nice locations, you've got different things, but the asset is always the people that you work with.
Absolutely.
The people create whatever your business does. And it's all a little bit of a mix, but when it really gets down to it, the people, because they want to be treated, we want our people to treat you like you want to be treated.
Right.
And there's a lot of out there that's just about, let's just get the sale, let's get it over with, let's get it done, let's move on to the next one. Sometimes it's busy like that, some people may feel that, but it's never the intention. The intention is always to give people the most one-on-one attention as possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, you know what, just the world that, man, we're in today, which has certainly evolved over the last 2-3 years with COVID, all we've been through with just the stress on everyone, the stress on families, kids, everything. I was telling a gentleman yesterday about our show we're starting here with you, and I said, you know, it's a shame. If you go out to restaurants much, you'll see couples, you'll see families sitting at a table, and most of the time on their phone. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
Not even really talking to each other. And when I think about this whole e-bike thing and getting families out together, couples out together, and just, hey, individuals out just to clear their head, I mean, this is a great, great therapy thing along as well for just everybody, isn't it?
Yeah, when you think about it, you know, as kids, we rode our bikes. We rode our bikes everywhere.
Everywhere.
That's how we got around, right? And then we wanted to go see a friend. That's what we did. You know, I was born and raised in Louisville, so that was kind of a small town environment. You know, everybody knew everybody. And you rode your bike.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as, you know, as the world changes and as it grows and more people come into play and all of that stuff, it's not quite as friendly as it used to be, regardless of where you live,
anywhere.
And so having, you know, a family activity, for instance, to get out on an e-bike or a bicycle. Sometimes, you know, the parents might be riding e-bikes and the kids are riding regular bikes. And that's fine.
Sure.
Right? And or maybe even you'll see grandparents on an e-bike or e-bikes, and the parents and then the grandkids are riding regular bikes. All of that's a nice mix.
Sure.
It's just about getting out and doing things again as families. Like you said, get off of the phone, get off of the internet stuff, mm-hmm. and go back to some of the nature. You know, one of the guys that is in our works with us, he's actually retired, and he has a retirement job with us, and he works in the warehouse and assemblies and stuff, and he has some cool stuff with owls. He's got video cameras set up, like game cameras and stuff like that. He knows so much about owls and their babies and, you know, everything that's taken place, their patterns, how they live, and it's really, really interesting, and to hear him talk and stuff like that. And he rides his e-bike around to his different stations, and he checks on his owls with his binoculars and his and then his game cam also. It's pretty cool. It's very interesting, and that's something that, you know, he does, mm-hmm. for instance. And it's a hobby to him, but he's really well known in the Louisville area for this. And
really?
Yeah.
The owl. The Owl Master.
Yeah. Marty the Owl Master.
Absolutely. Randy Kranz is our guest, once again, the owner of E-Bike of Colorado. Hey, two locations to serve you. Their original location and main location there, 544 Front Street in Louisville. And then just recently in Denver. So tell us about the Denver spot.
Yeah, so we opened a store in Denver. It's at 3819 North Inca Street, and that's in Denver. It's just at I-25 and 38th Avenue. It's about a 3,000 square foot store, so it's a sizable place. We've got pretty much the same.
No, so I walked in that other day, man. I'm like, wow, bikes everywhere.
Yeah, well, you know, we stock about 700 bikes at any given time, and the Louisville store always it's got 100 bikes on the showroom floor, and we've got probably close to 80 in Denver mm-hmm. right now, and so we're just meshing those two stores together, you know, with the main store doing most of the assembly and that type of stuff, but you will always be able to test ride and check out bikes, and that's the nice right. thing. You had to have a Denver location, brick and mortar location, to participate in the coupon. Mm-hmm. Situation, and you know, that's kind of a little bit of a change, because they just don't have that program figured out totally yet, and so we're working towards making that user friendly.
They ought to let you run it. Hey, Randy knows e-bikes. Let you run it.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting, because people that set those programs up, they've never run a retail store
exactly.
in their life.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, they don't have any kind of panel, or if they would have brought in several bike store owners, they probably would have gotten a really good program.
Absolutely.
And but so anyway, it is what it is, and we'll work with that, and we'll work around that, and help people, you know, maximize that mm-hmm. coupon program. Yeah.
Yeah, good deal. All right, a couple of things I want to talk about is just, and again, this just can be our initial kickoff for our show here, and we're going to be telling you, you know, a whole lot of things, just explaining all the different classes a bike will go through, hey, what's involved in maintenance with an e-bike. We're going to be getting with Colorado Parks and Wildlife, as well as Randy's staff, and letting you know about where and where you can't ride bikes, and what the different classes in different areas. We're going to go through a lot of that, because as Randy said, sometimes there are some things in print that are good guidelines, but sometimes there are some mistakes in some of that where I think, honestly, they just don't know.
I agree. You know, we ran into that with the Colorado State Parks guys. Mm-hmm. They told me about classes of e-bikes, and as I'm standing there listening to
misinformation.
It was misinformation. I asked them where they got their information, and they told me, and I said, well, that guy's not a big e-bike mm-hmm. supporter, so he may tell you some things, and I don't think he's being malicious at all, but we want to get that on track. We want to make sure that people fully understand where they can legally be ridden, and you'd be surprised, there's very few limitations.
Yeah, Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, stay connected. Get on. You know, most of us are on social media, whether we like it or not. Most of us are on there. Get connected with eBike of Colorado on Facebook, Instagram. As the weather starts clearing for us here, man, they do a lot of great fun events. There may be times of time. There may be some specials that Randy can run and offers and different things. But a lot of things will just be about some upcoming rides. And most time they add some a lot of great fun in with that, with some different deals at your store, don't you,
Randy? Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when we started the store in Louisville in 2017, we started July 1st, 2017, so we're coming up on 6 years.
Man.
And we started with, you know, 12 bikes. The story goes on, but maybe we'll get into one of the shows. But the point that I'm bringing out is we started a community with that, and we started group rides and barbecues and ice cream socials and just different things. We just were looking for anything we could to draw people into the community. And before you knew it, our group ride started out with 4 and 5 people, grew to 25 people, and then I was told one day that I had over 25, and they said that there was a Boulder County regulation that I couldn't have more than 25. Something more than 22 people or something. And anyway, it's but we still do them, and we're doing them, and we want them to grow as we add locations and as we do these types of things. It gets a little bit tougher, right?
Yeah.
But we still want that family atmosphere. We still want that connection of the e-bike community or the cycling community. We have people come that ride their regular bikes. They wish they hadn't, because we ride at about 12, 15 miles an hour on a group ride. We always tone it to the group themselves, and that's a really nice way to introduce e-bikes to people. They might be on the fence. They might have ridden some. They've researched it till they can't research it anymore, and then they get on them and they go, "This is so much different than I ever experienced or ever read about or talk to my brother-in-law about that's a cyclist, you know, but he's never been on an e-bike." And those are that's the thing we're trying to do, right? We're trying to educate and help people understand that this is not a motorcycle. You know, we always joke about it. If somebody brings up, "Oh, well, that's got a motorcycle feel to it," you know, if I'm in the store, I'll look over and I'll say, "Don't ever say that," you know. And we have fun in our store. We joke around a lot. It's a very, very easy atmosphere, inviting atmosphere. And people come in, and some of them are a little bit standoffish, because we know they've been to another shop somewhere where it's all stuffed shirt and stuff. We're not.
Right.
We want to have fun. We want to laugh. We want to joke. It's a fun thing to do. And the Louisville location, of course, you know, I'm obviously most familiar with that area, but the test ride area for that is just phenomenal. And, you know, the two stores are only about 17 miles apart, but it seems like Louisville is so much further than Denver.
Sure.
And it's really not. But that's why one of the reasons why the Denver location has been showing some success with that, because people feel like it's closer to them.
Absolutely.
And in a lot of cases, it is.
And, you know, I highly recommend you try them. I mean, it's like going to – I was in the furniture business forever, and people buy a mattress, and I'd say, "Well, lay down." "Oh, no, I'm fine." Or they, you know, they sit on the end of the bed and have their feet hanging off. I'm like, "Look, is that the way you sleep?" No. But you got to try these out, because all of them feel different for everybody.
Well, and that's true. They do feel different. And the thing about it is that we're all going to have a different style, or we have a different expectation of what we want in anything that we buy, but in a bike, for instance. And all of a sudden you go, "Well, this does feel heavy. It does feel bulky. It does feel..." And we put them on a different bike that's a little bit sleeker, and they go, "Wow, this is different than what I have been." I thought they were all really heavy.
Right.
And they are heavy. Let's face it. I mean, the bike has more weight to it, about an additional 25 pounds. The assistance helps with that weight, obviously. Plus, you know, you're gonna be able to ride a bike. Let's just say you would normally ride 10 miles a day on a bike.
Right.
You might find yourself 25 miles riding. I think you've experienced that yourself.
I mean, I used to hear of people saying, "Oh, I did this many miles on a bike." I'm like, "Are you nuts?"
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be the hardest thing in the world. And It's not.
It's not. No.
And it's enjoyable.
Yep. And you find yourself, you know, and you can get as much assistance as you want out of it or as little as you want. And you get as much exercise as you want or as little as that you would like. It's just, and it's a great way to commute. We're seeing more and more younger people that, you know, everybody says, oh, you've got to be retired. And, you know, I used to be a cyclist, so I'm going to go to the e-bike now. But you'd be surprised how many young people are using it for a commuting process and procedure, and they can just ride it. And it's amazing because they've just taken a car off the road.
Sure.
You know, by doing that, at least for that commute.
Right. What if I had somebody ask the other day, and they said, you know, man, I just don't feel comfortable on a bike, you know, on the streets and stuff with traffic and all that. And I said, no, you do have to be careful. Okay.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we live in a great state. Man, there are bazillion trails. Again, we're going to help people out with those in future shows, but there's a lot of great places to ride here safely.
There's a ton, and the infrastructure, trail system infrastructure here in Colorado is just, it'll blow you away.
Mm-hmm.
Places that obviously I don't know, but you know, we always are exploring, and my staff is those folks, they ride and they get after it, and they know a lot of places to go, and this is why we chose with your guidance to start this program, because this is going to give us an opportunity to talk about not just about our show and our know our promotional
it's really educating
people, and hopefully we can create some group rides that will be, you know, the Denver area, and also, you know, I mean, 17 miles on an e-bike one way is nothing. You know, we'll ride up to Louisville from Denver, or ride to Denver from Louisville, but the trail systems themselves connect so nicely, and you'll find yourself exploring, and that's half of the fun. Mm-hmm. I went out one day, I was having a little rougher day than normal. It's been about a year and a half now, and I was just needed to clear my head, and before I knew it, it was 6 hours, and I was just riding all kinds of different places. At one point, I went, "Where am I?"
Right.
And I knew sure, where I was. I was in the general vicinity, but all of a sudden I'm just riding on trails and just clearing my head. What a great day that was for me. You know, it just really was a nice day.
Absolutely. Once again, it's E-Bike of Colorado, 544 Front Street there in Louisville. By the way, their number is 720-739-0299. And their new location, 3819 North Inca Street in Denver. That's just right off 38th and I-25. You know, you mentioned the exercise portion. I want to bring that up because a lot of people think electric bike, okay, I'm not pedaling, so I'm not getting any exercise. Again, different classes, and we'll break all this down through future shows, but you are the chooser, if that's a word, of how much exercise you want, right?
Absolutely. They all have different levels of assistance, and let's just say some bikes only have 3 levels up to 6 levels of assistance, but the norm is usually around 4, maybe 5, and the higher the level, the more help it gives you. So that's nice when you're climbing hills and that type of stuff. Or if you're trying to really pick up some miles and just pedal fast and you want to go faster, and then you can drop it down to the economy level. You're going to preserve battery, of course, and you're going to end up riding that bike and getting the most exercise out of that bike. A lot of times you turn that bike off, and because of the weight of it, you really are getting a lot of exercise. You get your cardio up.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some studies, and we'll get that on a show where CU has done some studies at University of Colorado, where e-bikes, they don't peak your heart rate as much as a regular bicycle would. And what that does is it just keeps you consistent, and so you bring your cardio up, and then you slowly bring it back down. And e-bikes have proven to have an easier, I don't know what you call it, but easier on your heart. In your system itself.
Right. And you know, another thing, when I first got mine, and like I say, man, being honest, I hadn't been on a bike in 100 years, it felt like, but I said, man, how complicated is this going to be, you know, with the pedal assist, the throttle, and different things? Is it going to be a smooth, you know, easy for me in my mind while you're riding to think about? And it's so easy.
What was it, about 30 seconds?
No, if that, yeah. And I mean, you know, I mean, it's so easy to just push for the assist or hit the throttle if you want to get up a hill real quick, whatever, or cross the street a little bit faster just for safety, whatever the case is. But I mean, of course, your guys helped there too explaining it, you know, your team. But I mean, it was so super easy.
Yeah, you know, Scott, I wasn't there the day that you came in to look at the bikes. And obviously, my staff didn't know who you were. They,
sure.
You know, and they showed you in the parking lot, mm-hmm. didn't they? They went through the how it works. They let you ride it around the parking lot. As soon as you felt comfortable, they sent you out on the
trail.
They
took the training wheels off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then let me back out.
Yeah. And the next thing is I get a phone call from him. He goes, I just picked out a bike. I'm going to get it. And yeah. Your staff was great. And they sent me out on the trail after they mm-hmm. they gave me the orientation in the parking lot. It literally is less than 30 seconds to learn what it is, because you have the basics of riding a bike.
Right.
It's still a bicycle.
I mean,
we've
said that our whole lives about something that maybe we haven't done in a while. We say what? It's like riding a bicycle.
Exactly.
And that's very true.
Yeah, we say that all the time. They go, so what is this like? You know, they're getting, maybe somebody's just getting ready to go and they're on their orientation. And they're going, oh, it's just like riding a bike. And they go, oh, that makes sense. So...
Exactly. Now, let's talk about the maintenance side of things. And again, you got a great maintenance team and all of that. So some people say, okay, I get a bike. What am I looking at maintenance of owning one?
Yeah, it's basically the bicycle itself. So let's not talk about the electric side of it.
Okay.
It's still a bicycle. So you maintain it like you would anything else. Regular tune-ups, derailleur adjustments, oil the chain. If you have hydraulic disc brakes, you bleed the brakes. If you have cable brakes, you adjust the brakes. Those are the basics of any bike, you know, regardless if it's an electric bike or not. Then on the electric side of it, you'd be surprised. There's not as much that has to be maintained on those as you a person might think. Hmm. There are some software upgrades and things of that nature, depending on the brand
right.
of it. But for the most part, and then there are some specialty things when it comes to e-bikes if something stops working. But that's our staff. Our staff is qualified to do all of that. So let's not let the maintenance scare somebody away from, you know, mm-hmm. considering an e-bike. Now, I can only talk to the brands that we carry, but we carry, you know, anywhere from 14 to 18 brands. It depends on which day
right.
that I walk in the store, because we're continually growing that. And so some of the other brands that we don't carry, and there's reasons why we don't, that might be something that we, you know, we don't understand, or it might be something that we wouldn't carry for specific reasons.
Sure.
We can get into some of that, you know, as the show goes on. I mean, this mm-hmm. is going to be a very specific type items, you
Absolutely,
know, that we talk
yeah.
about.
Right.
And we'll do some 101 service techniques, tips and tricks on maintaining your bike, riding it, you know, just all kinds of different aspects of bicycle riding and e-biking.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And you guys carry a lot of accessories, so we can kind of get everything we need there at your shop.
Oh yeah.
To start riding, helmet, all the things.
Sure. Helmets, locks, mirrors, you know, bottle, water bottle cages, things of that nature, the basic stuff like that. And then we outfit bikes too for mm-hmm. people with, you know, smaller children and in child seats and things of that nature. And then there's one other aspect that I wanted to talk to you about, is that we do a lot of adaptive riding for riders.
Okay.
People with disabilities. We took that on by default. We had different people coming in to the store with disabilities, and they wanted e-bikes. And now we've grown that. And, you know, we can talk about success, we can talk about growth, we
Sure.
can talk about all of the things that have taken place from July 1st, 2017 to today, right? What is it, March 15th, 2023? We can talk all of those things in there, but somewhere in those years, we started with this adaptive group, and some of them are veterans, some of people were born this way, and we have changed, people say, you have changed my life.
Oh, I can't imagine.
Everything else goes away, Scott. I mean, you sit there and you look at those people, and you really have, in some cases, changed their life. We're talking about people that have to ride with a hand crank. We've actually had to Velcro their hands to the hand crank pedals because they can't control their fingers. It's another, that's another thing we could talk about if we wanted to do a show on that. But it's just, they've changed our lives, you know. That's for sure, when we see the joy that they get from that.
Sure.
And some independence.
Yeah, no doubt. It's E-Bike of Colorado. Hey, I hope you'll join us every week here, Wednesdays at noon, for Just Try It. And you know what? You may have conceptions about e-bike. Maybe you've been on vacation, you rented one, and maybe you're like, oh, man, that was a horrible bike. And you know what? It might have been, because that wasn't a bike for you. So come to the Denver location, 3819 West Inca Street, or, hey, run over to Louisville, 544 Front Street, and take a test ride on all the different models and makes that they have. And pretty confident in saying, I promise you, they can find a bike to fit your needs. And, Randy, because, I mean, it's just like with anything else. You know, nobody wants to underbuy, you know, wish they would have got something on a car. Or let's say when we, you know, we buy a car or something. Or you don't want to overbuy. And that was one thing I really appreciate your staff, because going through there, you know, I would never do some of the things, you know, on a bike that some of the other bikes would do. Or I didn't need that level.
Yep.
And they found the one that fit me for what I do in the outdoors.
Sure. And that's true. I mean, we can go, you know, we can go from a basic, just ride the streets, the trail systems, all the way up to a full suspension mountain bike, competitive style.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's everything in between. And we want to make sure that the person is on the right bike, the right fit for them. You know, and like I said, we're always adding staff. We're bringing on another gentleman that he understands all about bike fit. Our demographic doesn't really require that, but there are some.
Sure.
And you know, you've met some of my staff, and
yeah,
they can set you up pretty solid with a bike fit. But this might be just another level, you know, that we take it to. But either way, We're gonna make sure that you're on the right bike.
Absolutely. Well, man, looking forward to the show. This is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to do some great events with Randy, and, hey, maybe even do some live shows out on location with him, whatever the case may be. But I hope you'll become a part of the e-bike community by checking out E-Bike of Colorado, ebikeofcolorado.com. And once again, I hope you'll join us here every Wednesday at noon for Just Try It. And, Randy, once again, man, thank you for being a great partner for us, and looking forward to this year with you. And, man, it's going to be a lot of fun doing this show together.
Yeah, Scott, I'm really looking forward to it. And trust me, you won't always have to hear my voice on this. You'll hear other people as well.
No, man, you do great. And I'm looking forward to getting your team involved as well.
Yeah,
me too. Thank you so much. Hey, you're listening to Haystack Yelp Radio, or I should say, you've just been listening to Just Try It, brought to you by E-Bike of Colorado. We got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Thinking rates are too high to buy a home? Wish they were in the threes or fours? Well, your wait is over. Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage. With a 3-2-1 buy-down, you can now purchase a home at 3.193% first year, 4.913% second, 5.913 the third, and the remaining years at 6.913 with an APR of 6.985. If rates go down, refinance and save even more. On a $400,000 loan, your monthly payment would be over $748 a month less the first year, $511 the second, $262 the third, with a total savings of over $18,000. Before you buy, take AIM, 720-895-0500. 3-to-1 buy-downs available up to 95% loan-to-value. If you're thinking about home ownership, now may be the best time to purchase. Call Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Own your new home and save thousands in payments. That's 720-895-0500. 80% LTV, 30-year fixed, 6.985% APR, 740 FICO, primary home, rates as of 11/16, NMLS 298191, and rates subject to change.
Hey, Dan, you know our jobs are pretty different. I'm a baseball announcer, you're an attorney and a talk show host.
Yeah, but we do have something in common.
Really? What's that?
Our favorite car dealer, Len Lyle Chevrolet.
Yeah, definitely not your typical dealership.
That's so true, Jack. No high-pressure sales tactics. They respect your time. And when you have two jobs, that's important.
You know, I'd recommend Len Lyle Chevrolet to anyone. And with their low overhead, that means
lower prices. Yeah, we really do have something in common.
Len Lyle Chevrolet. Go east and pay the least. Chevy, find new roads.
Zip around the neighborhood, commute to work, or ride the trails on an e-bike. Hi, I'm Randy Carancy, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are electric bikes that are fun and easy to ride. Pedal assist technology flattens the steepest hills. At eBike of Colorado, we have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Just try it. Take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
KLZ 560, your home station.
Welcome to Food Chat, a weekly show that's all about food production, including farming, ranching, processing, and basically all things involved in getting food from the field to your plate. Now, let's get you reconnected to your food, and here are your hosts, Greg Bloom and Chef Jackson Lamb.
Talk about an uphill battle, 2,000 acres of beans and cattle. But he don't ever get rattled. He just goes till the sun goes down.
Welcome to Food Chat. Food Chat is the place where we talk about food, where it comes from, and your connection to it. I'm Chef Jackson Lamb. I've got 35 years of experience in the hospitality industry. And my co-host is Greg Bloom, who is a farmer, rancher, consumer, grower. He does it all. Greg, welcome and good morning.
Thank you, Chef. You know, and I also like to add to my list of things I've done is just a professional bag dragger. What I mean by that is for 30 years, I've gone into restaurant kitchens with my sample bag full of meats. And normally when I go there, I like to cook them with the chef instead of just dropping them off and hearing a week later that they forgot to try them, or they tried them and they didn't like them, or they tried them and they did like them. I like to be there for the presentation. And one thing that I've learned from chefs is how they cook it, and also what kind of sauce or gravy they put on it. And so this show today is all about tips and tricks from a chef, you, on how to make great sauces and gravies, because there's a lot to know.
Yeah, there's a lot of products out there, and depending on your own personal likes and dislikes, you know, we can find sauces that are canned, that are frozen, that are dehydrated, that we just add water to, okay? Or we can make things from scratch, you know, and a lot of chefs will make things from scratch. You know, we get the prime rib 109, it's got all the bones in it, or we get, a hind quarter. We're going to use those bones. We're going to make beef stock. And so, but a lot of times beef stock, we're going to use beef stock for like the prime rib sandwich when we have the au jus that we want to dip in there.
Right.
But if we want, we can take that au jus and we can keep cooking it. And let's just say we start with a gallon of au jus, okay? That's a water consistency. But if we can allow that to reduce, evaporate is really what I'm talking about. By the time you get down to one cup, okay, so let's use some numbers here. You're going from 128 ounces down to 8 ounces.
Wow.
What's happened is the flavor has become concentrated. It has that liquid has become thicker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's known as demi-glace.
Ah.
So that's where that really comes from. If we're making it from scratch, you know, we would make a beef stock, and let's just talk from the basics, okay? Beef stock, chicken stock, we can do lamb stock, but it's where we're taking the bones of a protein, and we're going to basically simmer them over a period of time. We might add some aromatics to that. The French have a word, mirepoix. I like to use the term aromatic vegetables, which primarily are onions, carrots, and celery. Mm-hmm. And basically, those aromatic vegetables add to the flavor of the chicken stock, beef stock, lamb stock that we're creating.
That's a great explanation. Well, what we're trying to accomplish with today's show is to get people to explore the idea of making their own sauces, because you know what happens is they go to the store and they buy their meat. Maybe it's Thanksgiving time. And what you don't want to do really is buy the little packet of whatever for the powder packet for 49 cents or 99 cents or $2.99. Most of the time, those I found are not like restaurant quality. Those are not what you're going to find a chef using. Now, chefs do have some tips and some tricks. Sometimes they make their own stock, but sometimes they will use a base. So maybe we could talk a little bit about the base, and then we'll talk to people about where they can find those bases, because you can't find them in a retail store.
Right.
So what's on the shelf in a normal kitchen as far as bases to make a quick base?
You know, there are products out there that you can certainly buy and put in your pantry at home, which will enable you to make a beef stock, a chicken stock, or a vegetable stock. That's very, very big right now. Let's get the proteins out of there and let's go with a plant-based cuisine. So, and I find that for a lot of recipes, I can easily substitute vegetable stock for beef stock, or vegetable stock, I'm sorry, for chicken stock. Mm-hmm. So they're very comparable. The other issue when we think about it is that we're taught, you mentioned bases. But in almost every grocery store in town, there is a section that it's nothing but boxed stock, you know, and we'll see. Sometimes they're going to call it.
Don't they call it a bouillon cube? Is that the same thing when you see those little chicken and beef bouillon cubes? Is that the same thing?
Well, that's exactly what those are. But buyer beware.
Right.
You know, we've got to start. This is where we read labels. And the problem with using, you know, those little bouillon cubes or any kind of a base, you want to make sure that when you're looking around before you purchase, read that label. A lot of times the leading ingredient is salt or sodium.
Right.
And, you know, that is going to completely change the profile of your end product.
Exactly. Right.
You know, so, but you can shop around, you can look around, you know, that's why going with the liquid stocks already, quite often they'll say on the box, sodium free.
Right.
You know, and again, you can get the same results getting a quart container of beef stock and letting that reduce to get it down to that demi-glace.
As far as reading the labels, I've done that in chefs' kitchens. I'll go look at the label, and usually the high-end ones, and there's some good brands out there. Miners is one. You mentioned one earlier. You can talk about Leroy. But if you look at the ingredients on the back, instead of the first ingredient being salt, the first ingredient might be beef stock or beef base or chicken. But so these are actually real meats in that beef stock, and therefore a lot of these need to be refrigerated. They're not shelf stable. You'll see them in the cooler, but there are some that are shelf stable that still have a lot of chicken or real beef in them or real vegetables in them. So yeah, definitely read the labels. And I found that when you go to like Amazon and you order these, you'll find that the more expensive they are, usually the better they are, right?
Well, you pay for quality, that's for sure.
So, but let's talk about the beef and chicken base options for people, and then I want to have you describe how to make a vegetable base from stock. Like, what vegetables would you put in there? You know,
wonderful.
So,
very good.
As far as the bases, so we mentioned what's the brand that you know about that people can actually go online and look for?
LaRue.
Okay.
LaRue, which is a French term. You know, the French and the Swiss seem to corner this market of sauces, and so you mentioned earlier off air. Miners,
brand.
Exactly. And I think they have 40 different types of stock out there. You can get like a clam base stock if you're doing a seafood component.
Okay. So let's go to how to make your vegetable stock. How do you make a good vegetable base?
Well, you know, let's start with mirepoix. Okay. I mentioned that earlier.
Right.
So that would be carrots, onion, and celery. But, you know, when we're just doing vegetables, we might need a little bit more oomph. And I will typically go to parsnips. That's where there's a lot of flavor. Broccoli, no.
No, thank you.
Cauliflower, no. Green beans, no. Those are not aromatic. They're vegetables, but they're not going to contribute to a stock, okay? But in any stock making, whether it is vegetable, beef, chicken, lamb, bacon, you can certainly make stock with bacon, that's for sure. That's another story. We'll get down that road later on. What we want to do is we also want to consider thickeners. Mm. Okay, so in other words, we might have a vegetable stock that has the consistency of water. Mm-hmm. Okay,
right.
Well, I think from a chef's perspective, we want to have a sauce where if we were to take a spoon and dip it in that sauce, it would lightly coat the back of the spoon.
Okay.
So that gives you a great hint as to viscosity. There's another great word. So in other words, we want to get to a certain thickness so it sticks to the potatoes, so it sticks to the meat, so it sticks to whatever else is going to be on that plate. So thickeners, let's talk about that. The most common and usually the first one we normally learn in a culinary environment is making roux. Mm-hmm. Okay, R-O-U-X, again a French word. But roux is a combination of flour and oil. Could be a number of different types of oil. Could be peanut oil. Could be olive oil. It could be canola oil. It can be butter.
Mm.
So butter is really the preferred way to go. And really what you do is you want to take equal parts of butter and flour. Let's say a tablespoon of each. We want to put that in a saute pan. We want to allow the butter to melt. The butter will actually cook the flour. And it's going to make a very thick paste. That's really what's going to happen. So now we have this saute pan with a thick paste in it. Okay? If we add our vegetable stock to that and use a whisk and whip that up, we're going to have a nice, thicker consistency in that sauce. Well, now we're making sauce. We're making gravy. In fact, let's just take what I just mentioned. Let's go to Thanksgiving dinner, okay?
Okay.
We've got that big turkey in a roasting pan. It might be in the oven. Maybe we've got that tabletop roaster that we see on sale every year. But we're probably also putting aromatic vegetables under the turkey just to... because we want that flavor.
Right.
Too often, we pull the turkey out of the oven. We try to cut it when it's way too hot. We haven't let it chill down and re-therm, if you will. And then all of a sudden, the pan drippings, which are very valuable from a flavor profile, they go wanting. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't use them.
Right.
So I always look at something like turkey and Thanksgiving as a two-day process. We would do the turkey on Wednesday, take the whole thing apart, let it chill completely. You know, a chilled turkey carves a lot easier than a hot turkey.
And I think it tastes better, too.
Yeah. And then what you can do is you can assemble that into a roasting pan, just heat it up the next day.
Right.
But it gives you the opportunity to work with those pan drippings. So,
right.
All right, let's walk us through that. We've got turkey fat. We've got water. We've got all the flavor from the aromatic vegetables. That would go through a strainer. Mm-hmm. We would try to filter that out. But now we've got a perfect turkey stock ready to go. Two ways to go here. One is we create roux, which I just talked about. Another common thickening style, very popular in the Asian communities, is using water and cornstarch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called making a slurry. So you can do equal parts of water, cold water, and cornstarch in a separate glass, separate bowl, whip that until the cornstarch dissipates, and then add that. I don't add it all to the stock.
No, a little at a time. A
little bit at a time, because all of a sudden, when the heat gets to that cornstarch, it will thicken up. And if you add all of it it might be too thick for
Yeah, and I've also made the mistake of not doing the cornstarch and the water separately and stirring it up, and I've just added it to the gravy or whatever, and then it lumps.
That's absolutely correct. Then you get lumpy gravy.
Right. What about the other shortcut method, if you don't want to do that, is to use a Knorr product? You know what I'm talking about, the Knorr bases, the thickening agents that are in a half-gallon size that you'll see chefs use. You don't talk about the brown powder.
Oh, sure.
You can find that on Amazon, too, even that brand Knorr, K-N-O-R-R.
Yeah.
I use that at home sometimes to thicken up. And I find sometimes, because I don't have time to make my own roux, it's not bad.
Yeah. And it's really got the same components as roux.
Right.
It's probably like dehydrated roux is really what it is, because you can add that without getting the clumpiness in the sauce, and it's a lot more convenient.
Now, I do find that learning how to make your own roux is a great, great culinary thing to do, because you can add these bases. They become the foundation for excellent soups, gravies, sauces. You know, there's so many meats that really don't taste good without a good sauce, like even a beef tenderloin, which is so tender, right? But it doesn't have a lot of flavor like a lot of other cuts do. And you can't go at any banquet. You and I go to banquets all the time for food events. And if you're having pork, it's got a gravy on it. If you've got a chicken and you're serving 300 people, it's got a gravy on it.
Yeah.
Because they need to keep that meat moist.
That's true.
So I want people listen to this show to realize how foundational it is to learn how to make these sauces for great at-home cooking.
Sure. You know, again, we went out several months ago and had short ribs.
Right.
Well, it was swimming in a pool of demi-glace. It was delicious.
Right.
But, you know, quite often a hot sauce will rescue a cold entree every time.
A hot sauce will rescue a cold entree. That's a good thing to remember.
That's a great thing to remember, because all of a sudden, you know, that chicken breast, all of a sudden it's no longer 160 degrees, 140 degrees. Now it's 130, 120. And so, again, if you have a bubbling chicken stock, chicken sauce, you're having, let's just say that we're having biscuits and gravy and mashed potatoes and fried chicken, you know, a hot sauce over that will bring it right back up to temp.
Right, and if you like to save some money and shop off at the sale counter at the meat department, whatever is on sale in that bin you're going to buy, a lot of times that meat might not be the best quality meat, you know, but you can rescue it with a great sauce.
Yeah.
And it'll still be good.
Absolutely. Or, you know, quite often if you're sauce making, you can disguise so many things.
Right.
It actually, if you're good at sauce making, it can really increase your versatility in the kitchen.
Right. We were going to entitle this show "The Sauce is Boss," and the sauce is boss on, but I don't want people to think we're talking about barbecue sauce. We're talking about how to make great bases and gravies. What else can someone do when they learn this art of making good bases? What kind of things would they do with that culinary? Is this used for what? Soups, stews? What else would they use it for? I have one comment that I use it for. I love to cook Colorado-grown pinto beans in a crock pot.
Yeah.
And what I do is I just rinse those beans really quickly in a colander, and then I throw them in the crock pot and cover them with about 4 inches of water over the beans, because those beans are going to soak all that water in.
Sure.
And I put in there three ingredients, salt and pepper and a can of diced green chilies. But I noticed that if I use base, like chicken base or vegetable base, instead of water, tastes so much better.
Oh, sure.
So much better. So that's a good trick. What else can people do with this arsenal now they have of making great bases?
Let me just interrupt by saying, we've discussed this off air, but to do those pinto beans or black beans in an Instapot,
yes,
really intensifies the flavor.
And to use a base instead of water, right?
Absolutely.
The base they're talking about. I have a question for you about, you didn't mention garlic. Is garlic, it's an aromatic, is it too potent? Does it overpower? Do you think, you mentioned carrots, onions, celery as aromatics and throwing in some parsnips, but what about garlic?
Yeah, it's overwhelming, is the problem.
Yeah.
And so, and the same thing with spices. You don't want to use salt and pepper when you're making stock.
Okay.
Once the salt is in there, you can't get it out of there.
Okay.
All right?
Good rule.
Well, listen, let's pause for a second. We've been talking about making gravies or sauces from animal proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about when you want to go out for breakfast and you want to have that chicken fried steak with the country gravy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, wait a second. That's not chicken stock, beef stock, or anything else. That is, we're starting with milk.
Mm.
Okay? We're making a roux, just like we talked about earlier, but instead of adding stock to that, we add milk. This gives us, the proper term is a bechamel sauce.
Mm.
Okay? But again, living the farm life, sausage might find their way into that gravy, okay? Again, if we're having biscuits and gravy, that's a meal in itself right there.
Yeah, delicious.
Absolutely. Or anytime we're working with any type of juices, you know, we can make a raspberry or strawberry sauce that would go over a dessert. Well, you'd want something that's going to be thick enough so that it will cling to the cheesecake, the ice cream, the carrot cake, whatever that dessert might be. And again, typically in fruit-based sauces, we're going to thicken that up with probably cornstarch.
Now, I've ruined some really good pans trying to make dessert sauces. So I want you to address that, because talk about the heat and the pan. Because if you walk away from the stove, you could ruin your pan and the sauce.
Well, the problem is, for a long time, years ago, I was into making what we would call blueberry gastique, French term, but I would take fresh blueberries and puree them. Now I've got this blueberry sauce, if you will, but gastique is a combination of vinegar and sugar. It gives you that sweet and sour flavor.
Nice.
Very, very nice. And so, again, we can incorporate, you know, vinegar. Vinegar in a sauce? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But to your comment, now we're dealing with sugar. Mm-hmm. Okay? So when we're dealing with beef stock, chicken stock, there's no sugar involved here. We can bring things to a boil and just let them go. But when we're making a raspberry sauce, a strawberry sauce, we're working with blueberries. Hey, not only are we dealing with the natural fructose sugar that's in the fruit, we're probably going to add extra sugar as well,
right,
to bring that sweetness level up so that it'll complement the cheesecake or whatever the dessert is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's a good trick. Just don't walk away from the stove when you're cooking a dessert sauce. Let's go back to what you can do with so we might have some vegetarians or some vegans in the audience, and they want to really kind of dial in making great vegetable stock. You talked about carrots and onions and celery and maybe parsnips, and then they want to thicken that up. So I just want to go back to that. They want to, it's watery, so it might be good for the soup, but they need to thicken it up. Do they do that with then what, flour or cornstarch or the cornstarch water mix?
Well, we can go either way. But if you do the first of all, if we're vegan, we're not going to use butter.
Right.
Okay. So, but you can use olive oil, and you can use equal parts olive oil and flour, and make that roux as we talked about earlier. And then you would add the liquid to the roux. In fact, we kind of talked about this earlier. I make roux. I remove half of it. I'll incorporate it later on if I need it, but I don't want to create, all of a sudden I've got a sauce that's way too thick. So it all depends on, there is a ratio to get to between roux and liquid. And
right,
if we have too much roux and not enough liquid, we're going to have a clumpy mess. But, you know, that's why I try to hold back on the roux, because we can always make it thicker. But if I'm out of raspberry juice,
right,
then I'm stuck.
Right. Now, this might sound like a lot of work for people to do at every meal. So can they batch cook sauce or roux and then put it in the refrigerator? And if so, how long would it last? And how much should they make at a time, do you feel?
I do it all the time. You know, in previous shows, we've talked about making a great pot roast in an Instapot,
right,
okay? And again, we're putting in potatoes and carrots and onions in there. I can capture that sauce when it comes out of that Instapot, strain that, put that in, into plastic cups in the freezer. It'll last all season long.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, that's a good thing. You can freeze it. You can freeze it in small containers.
And especially with demi-glace, you know, when I'm making that pot roast, and it's very intense in flavor. Let me just clarify also what I there's a secret ingredient when I'm working with beef. So I'll use a standard mirepoix, which is onions, carrots, and celery. It's two parts onion to one part carrot to one part celery.
Okay? 2-1-1. Two parts onion to 1-1. Okay.
That's right. Once we're all done, I bring in tomato.
Ooh.
Tomato paste, because that is going to bring in color. That's going to bring in flavor. And then in the reduction process, tomato paste is already a thickened sauce when you think about it. It acts like a roux.
Yeah, right.
It's fantastic.
And it adds a lot of flavor.
It adds a lot of flavor, and then that can be frozen. And, you know, you can pull that out on an as-needed basis.
And then what sort of things would you now make? So if you've got your vegetable stock, and you it's in the cooler, and you've got or in the freezer, you've got it all. What sort of dishes can you now make with that, do you feel?
Well, if you've got a vegetables, you've got a sauce that was made from vegetable stock, okay? Grilled portobello. Let's start there.
Ooh,
okay,
yum. Love it. Love
absolutely.
It. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, you know, and a lot of times I've seen it where we can take a portobello and we remove the gills on the inside. They're called the gills, but it's the inside part.
Sure.
Scrape that out with a spoon, and then you can stuff that mushroom. I've seen it stuffed with diced vegetables.
Yeah.
I've seen it stuffed with a combination of diced vegetables and cheese. But that can either be baked in the oven, or you can put that on a grill outside.
I've done that before. It's delicious.
Well, just don't flip it over if there's cheese on it. That's
right.
For sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, all of a sudden now we're in a plant-based cuisine environment. You've got a sauce that is a vegetable-based sauce that's thick. That can go right over the top of that. Maybe we've got a couscous or orzo on the side. It all works very, very well.
Yeah. And also sometimes, too, like you have some vegetables that just don't have a lot of flavor. Like, I don't know, there's a lot of vegetables that, you know, they're good for you. Let's just say broccoli and cauliflower.
Yeah.
But you can enhance those with that same sauce. Just put a little couple tablespoons of sauce over it, and your kids might eat them.
Absolutely. And again, you know, depending on, you're trying to build a whole plate here. So, you know, again, there might be risotto involved. Might be mashed potatoes, rice. There could be pasta involved there. But, yes, we can certainly utilize all of those ingredients. And who knows? The kids might like broccoli.
Yeah, you never know. The sauce is the boss. Well, hey, Chef Jackson, thanks for sharing your insights today on how to make great sauces and gravies. I think one of the biggest takeaways I have from the show today is that on Thanksgiving, don't cook the turkey the day of, right before your guests all arrive. You really can't use the drippings. You got to do it the day before, and it's a lot more stress-free anyway. Because then the turkey's done, and then you're just heating it up. And that's what they do at restaurants, too. They're not cooking the turkey the day that you go in there. So that's a great tip. Thank you.
It's a pleasure, and it gets you to utilize that valuable pan of pan drippings. I'll close with a... working with another chef years ago, he'd say, you know, my mother makes gravy, but I make sauce. Chef quote.
Learn how to make a great sauce, everybody. You won't be sorry.
You know, it's well worth your time and investment.
Great. Hey, everybody, thanks for joining us on Food Chat today. We hope you enjoyed the show.
Hey, it's Chef Jackson Lamb signing off. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.
Today's Food Chat episode was brought to you by RanchFreshMeats.com. RanchFreshMeats.com finds the best quality beef in the marketplace, but not only beef, bison and chicken and lamb and all kinds of great proteins that come from family farms that we know personally. And if not the farm, then the USDA plant. So go to RanchFreshMeats.com and sign up for the weekly newsletter, because every week we pull a name at random and give away a box of meat. RanchFreshMeats.com. Here's to the farmer that plants the fields in the spring, that turn from green to that harvest honey. Hold one up for the banker downtown that got him on his feet with
good handshake of money. Here's to the farmer's wife that loves him every night. Raising a son, raising a daughter. They gather around the table, send it up to the father. Somehow they get closer when times get harder. Here's to the farmer.
The views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.